This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
A unique mix of world news and queer culture, Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12, on Joy 94.9.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, Macca and Tass. We're now joined by Oliver Yates. Oliver is on the board of the Smart Energy Council. He's also Executive Director of UPC Renewables. He's made a couple of contributions recently in the public policy area. And it's a pleasure to have you here. Welcome, Oliver.
Thank you. Welcome, everybody.
Great to have you in the studio.
That's very nice to be here. It's a fantastic day in Melbourne.
So the opening question to you from me is going to be, what does it feel like to be in the current Liberal Party? What does it feel like to be a member of the current Liberal Party?
Well, look, I can't talk for all Liberal members in any possible way, but, you know, there's a number of us, or I would say quite a number of us, who would like the Liberal Party to change its policies on a variety of matters, and particularly its inaction on climate change. And for a lot of us, it's a very important moral question, is that, you know, and we believe that one of the core obligations of government is to keep us safe. I mean, that's one of the basic jobs of government, I reckon. You know, most people don't want government in their life, but they would like them to keep you safe. And the climate change issue is a real significant issue for us all. And young people want it addressed. Some of the older people, you know, maybe don't quite get it. But for a lot of us, this is a very important exercise, which is non-negotiable.
So you've really talked about your aspirations for the Liberal Party, but you haven't actually answered my question.
Well, I don't think you can say the Liberal Party has one view, and that's what you've seen, obviously, in the way that, you know, potentially, in my view, if the views are this diverse, then splitting it may make sense. The Liberal Party wasn't a unified group when it was originally started. There's no necessary reason why it has to sit as a unified group. You could actually have two branches of it. They may have different names, but, you know, we're still all keen on the economy. We're all keen on sensible policies, but the climate change policy is one of the unsensible policies that we don't agree on.
So some of your peers in the Liberal Party believe that climate change is a left-wing conspiracy. What's your view to that?
They're what I'd consider to be irrelevant peers. I mean, the science is clear. The science is clear on this. If people want to be ignorant, then that's their choice. You know, you can't make people, you know, educate themselves or be sensible. If they want to be stupid, then they're entitled to be stupid, I guess.
Well, it's not an offence to be stupid. If it was, people, there'd be jails, would be full.
Yep.
One thing that I find interesting, and I want to get on to the climate stuff in a sec, but there's a Chinese lady who's the candidate, Liberal candidate in Chisholm. She ran a very, very stringent anti-marriage equality campaign, very high profile, within the Chinese community, and she's the endorsed Liberal candidate for Chisholm to take over from Julia Banks. Basically, she thinks that LGBTI folk are not well. She thinks we're a blot on society. She thinks marriage equality. How can you, as a liberal, as a member of the Liberal Party, I assume you don't support that view?
No, I don't support that view at all.
So, what is someone like you, if you lived in Chisholm, what would you do?
You would actually use your vote appropriately. I mean, if you want to send a message to the Liberal Party, and it's important people understand now.
So, you would vote against a Liberal candidate?
Well, of course, that's what you would have to do. You have a democratic right to do that. And what's more importantly at the moment, when you go and vote and give your first preference to a candidate this election, and people don't understand this, you're making a donation to that party.
Yes.
You're making a $2.70 donation. So when you walk up to that polling booth, if you don't think the person or the party which you're giving your vote to is worth your $2.70, because it's coming out of your pocket, you're paying for it, don't give it to them. Give them the second preference. Put them number two. Put the person you think
like
and give
like
them the money.
Idea.
I mean, it's a real money. It's $2.70. I spoke about it with my kids, and I'm trying to explain them. And I said, okay, if I gave you $2.70 and you got to go down to the polling booth and you got to give it to somebody, does that change your view? And they went, I don't want to give my $2.70 to anybody. That's but, you right. know, the issue is then they had to think of is where am I spending my $2.70? And people don't understand the whole idea of donation reform is that now the taxpayers are funding political parties and people don't understand that they're wasting their $2.70 and they're giving a donation which they're voluntarily giving to a party that they might not like. Well, send them a message.
Yeah. Good. I like that.
Oh, I just think it's also very interesting that you as a member of the Liberal Party, and I presume in some way have been active, are actually prepared to vote against your own party because of an issue.
Well, you could say the same thing about a footy club that's got bad management. You know, you could vote the chair out and try and say, I want to get rid of the coach. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, politics is a bit like being part of a footy club. You kind of get born into it. My old man was a Liberal politician, so I campaigned from when I was, you know, like 10, 9, door knocking in Dandenong out in the suburbs, which was a marginal seat. And so you're hooked on the same team. That's the colours. Well, that's bad luck. That's what you're in. And if you don't agree with it, you know, and you want to be supporting the team longer term, then you don't sit around and not argue with it and not try and change it. So reform is very important. Any institution or even organism that doesn't actually transform dies. If you don't reform yourself, you're dead. These guys are heading towards the path of being dead because they refuse to reform.
An endangered species.
They're endangered. If you look at the number of members within the Liberal Party, they're not only endangered in membership, but they're endangered in age. Mm.
So let's go back to the issue of climate change. Yeah. What is it about climate change that's actually got the Liberal Party so divided?
And the Nationals.
Well, yeah, but you can't speak about the Nationals.
Well, no one wants to.
Look, the real problem with this is that I think most people can't fathom why they can't accept the science. And so most people, I think, fairly assume that there is something else going on under this. Now, and I feel there's something else going on under this because you can't believe that this many people can be blatantly stupid. So is it donations? Is it on the take? Is it the trips to India? Is it the way that they're paid? And to be honest, there are so many ways political politicians can be influenced financially these days that it's a joke. So they changed the remuneration system for ministers. So if you're a minister, you get a 75% boost in your salary.
Yeah.
So you start off with 200 and then next thing you know, you're on 380. So if a large donor goes up to someone in the Liberal Party and says, hey, you know, I'll give you $1 million, but I want this person to be a minister and that person to be a minister, well, effectively, that $1 million could effectively be going to give that minister an extra $170,000 that it doesn't deserve. And sometimes I look at some of the ministers who are holding portfolios and I don't know why their minister's holding those portfolios.
Do you really believe that there's that level of corruption taking place?
Do you really believe there's not?
Mm.
Do you really believe there's not? Do you really believe that we have an electoral system where less than 40% of the donations that go to parties are actually accounted for? Okay?
Mm.
So what do you think? I mean, and also, how can you not think that something's going on? How do you think that people are there who have a sole responsibility to put Australia's interest first and the interest of their electorate first? How can they possibly be making these type of decisions to threaten our future and threaten our environment when the science is so clear? So for me, if people are making a highly illogical decision and continue to do it, you have to assume that this has got nothing about logic. It's got to have something to do about something else. And that is the reason why I've been calling and many other people have been calling to make sure we have this federal ICAC, this federal anti-corruption body. Now, we've heard that they want to do it, but they're saying, oh, they don't want it retrospective. So it's kind of like, well, what do you mean by not retrospective?
Bring it on.
What are you saying? You're saying, oh, look, all that activity we did before, well, we don't really want you to look at that activity because apparently before it was okay to be corrupt. We only want to start looking at it from now. Well, that's just rubbish. An anti-corruption committee needs to go right through back here and say, why are politicians making illogical decisions? Mm. And that's what needs to be done.
And, you know, when you have politicians that vote for legislation to allow access to your digital life, and then when they're asked a question to provide some evidence of their digital life, they refuse.
Well, you know,
I mean, how many ways do you spell hypocrisy?
I had a conversation with my 21-year-old nephew recently, who's just come back from, you know, finding himself overseas over the last 12 months, and so he's been a bit disconnected from what's occurring in the world. And I happened to tell him about our current Prime Minister coming into Parliament with a lump of coal and caressing it and telling the world how beautiful it was. And my 21-year-old nephew, who is not political in any way at all, could not believe that that occurred. So, of course, I pulled out my device, found a couple of articles, photographs, sent them to him, and he just rolled his eyes in complete and utter disbelief.
Well, I think, I did a kind of like a workshop with two groups of people, and one was an older group and one was a younger group. And they were asked similar questions, and it was funny when you ask these type of questions, you know, should you have a new coal-fired power station? Everybody in the younger group just cacked up laughing, okay? In the older group, to be honest, they were still thinking of this issue of reliability and whether you needed a coal-fired power station. And I've got sympathy for this because the energy market has changed so fast that, obviously I was the head of the Clean Energy Finance Corporation, which is the $10 billion government bank. And so I could see, I can see and have quite a high knowledge of the transition that's underway.
And also what works.
Yeah, well, what works and what economically works and what's economically sensible. But even in that role, I was constantly surprised at how quickly the technology is changing and how quickly the costs are falling. But I had to sit in Senate estimates and ask, you know, the senators had asked me questions from both parties, and you're under oath, and they say, well, you know, would you economically, is it economic to build a new coal-fired power station? And 3 years ago, you could say, no, absolutely not. And we still seem to be debating it today, but the CSIRO and AEMO came out just before Christmas, and of course the report wasn't allowed to be released until Christmas Eve, which actually set out categorically that there is no economic way that you would ever consider building a new coal-fired power station in this country. But of course, when was it delayed to? The report was delayed to be dumped out on Christmas Eve.
The next federal election is going to be fought on a lot of issues. How important do you believe the climate change issue is going to be? One, for the current government. I mean, their discussion would be quite simple, is we don't believe it. And the opposition and the Greens and other parties. How central is this issue going to be in the next federal election?
Look, I think it's a central issue for motivation. So a lot of the independents who will stand, and there will be a number of them standing at the next election, are motivated by trying to rectify what is considered to be a huge moral failure of the Liberal Party on this. But for the people in the street that I talk to, the biggest kind of macro issue that they're looking at is really how do we do immigration well? And they're welcoming immigration generally, but they're struggling with the lack of infrastructure and how is it running so fast? What's the composition of immigration? And that's a real thing that everybody feels. People feel it in relation to their environment, the blocks of flats, the congestion on the trams. And I think it's an important question to take. Mm. We want to be a big country. We want to be a successful country. And if we have made that decision that that's what we want to do, then we need policies and we need to be really honest about how do we do immigration well. And because it really affects people's lives. So climate change is really important. You know, to me, it's a really important issue. It's a fundamental black line issue. From my scenario, you cannot have a government who's putting policies in place that purport to defeat science, okay, that argue against science. But for a lot of people on the street, their day-to-day interaction, if they're not as familiar with climate change, it's really this question of how do we do immigration well? I mean, crime and all that type of stuff is great in hospitals, but the macro issue is we're growing as a country. We seem to be doing it in an unplanned way. Why the hell don't we have long-term plans, and why aren't we investing in infrastructure earlier before the population growth kicks in?
So I can't help myself, but I have to ask you this question. Does the Liberal Party have an issue with women?
I think you'd have to say Liberal Party has an issue with a cultural issue. So that's the other core issue of the reason why this election is so important, because if you want to change a culture of a party, you actually need to gut it. Mm. And there is a cultural issue, and it's bullying. It is women. It's this sense that if I'm in power, you should do what I say. And then if you don't agree with what I say, I should almost threaten your job. So I'm aware, of circumstances, and I've been involved in it, where if the government doesn't like what you're saying, they might ring up your employer and say, I don't really like what so-and-so's saying. Now, that is a complete breach of the freedom of rights to speak here. And that goes to another issue that we need in this country. We need a Bill of Rights. If the government thinks it can call up your employer because they don't like what you're saying, as an independent person, contributing your valued views to society, which is what every individual should do. Every individual should contribute their views. But if the government thinks that they can call up your boss and try and threaten your job because of you expressing independent views, that should be a criminal offence.
We've talked long and hard about the issue of a human rights charter or a Bill of Rights or whatever you might want to call us. It's come up as a conversation item in the context of the Religious Freedoms Review that was commissioned by our former Prime Minister, Liberal Prime Minister, the Ruddock Review as it's well known. And it's an issue that we believe warrants further discussion and further debate, and it's something that actually can help to frame the way in which the values of our society, the culture that we want to create, actually is preceded, you know, is rolled out.
Well, I'm dead in support of that. We need it. We need a we're a you know, mature nation, and to not to have a Bill of Rights where nearly every other country does, and most states are putting in place these now, but again, we still have the federal government, the Liberal Party, dragging their feet. They're dragging it on everything. They're going to drag it on the change to Australia Day. Australia Day will change. You know, it'll happen. Why? Because you can just see the momentum. You can't have a day where 20% or 30% of the population don't feel included. That's not an Australia Day. That's a kind of 70% happy day, you know. So we have to find these days that are right. We have to grow up as a nation and recognise our history and recognise that what we're doing with that day is to celebrate our nation, a unified nation. That's what it's there for. It's not to celebrate the arrival of a boat or the, you know, putting up of the first flag. That's what I think Australia Day is all about, is to celebrate us as a unified, inclusive, diversified nation.
I've been asked to raise another subject with you, and that's related to what's occurring out in one of our rivers at the moment with the fish dying in the Meninji Lakes. Yes. So what's going on there?
Can I just say, though, I reckon the most fertile part of Australia is the National Party room.
I assume that's because you think there's more bullshit coming out of the National Party room than anything else. Is that why you're saying it's fertile?
They're definitely on a fertilisation mission. To see, I don't know, 1.1 million dead fish in a water system, you know, that politicians at all levels in Canberra have talked about water. And to me, this is a basis of life. You know, you don't have water, we don't have life. For so long, the system's failed, hasn't it?
Well, no, the system actually was failed by others.
Was failed, yeah.
So it was failed, and people need to understand the issue is that the original Water Act that was put in place, so before, 10 years ago, the head of the Murray-Darling Authority actually resigned over this change. Generally, in a world of a sensible world, what you say is actually, first and foremost, the river was there and the environment was there. So the river and the environment needs a flow of water, okay? After that, business and the communities who are all arriving there can have whatever they want. But actually, the guys who were there first, which is the fish and the planets and the animals and the environment, needs a flow of water. So it goes first to make sure it is sustainable, because you can't have a community and you won't have a business without a sustainable environment. And then you study what excess water there is in relation to those environmental flows, and you can allocate that excess water to business. And that is the way the system used to run. And then we had those people who are in that wonderful room doing some fertilising saying that, no, the environment should not be put ahead of business and people. That it had to be dragged back to being equal with people. So they went and reset this and said, we need to have a system that manages the river into a triple bottom line. Mm. Okay? So the environment didn't have first rights to water. No, it had equal rights with business and people. Now, what I don't see floating in Menindi Lakes is businesses, and I don't see people, but I do see the environment floating in Menindi Lakes. So how, again, can we end up in a society of sensible people going logically through the process of coming up with long-term policies that are supposed to be in the interest of everybody, not actually recognising that the person who needs the water first or the rights which they have always had forever should be entitled to those rights, and society and business will get second dibs on those rights. And that's all that's happened here, is that greed, environment shouldn't get it first, too bad. We want to make sure that the environment's not put ahead of business or people. And we will see this across the nation in many other sectors unless we get our priorities right and put the environment in front of business, and then recognise that we as people have to fit within, sustainably fit within the environment and the environmental circumstance that surround us.
Perhaps the only place in the future we're going to see fish, flora and fauna is on a cotton tea towel. From cotton that's come from some of our cotton farms. It's a clever way of raising the issue, Macca.
Look, I think that this is again is a simplistic argument. You can blame industry, but industry.
Oh no, they take advantage of the rules.
If you change the rules to enable them to max, they will. Business has a responsibility to maximise their profit. That's what they do. We all know that. Yeah. So if the rules are stacked in favour of them actually making money, they will actually exploit those rules until the cows come home.
They'll use it.
So, you know, what do you expect? You don't expect business to be a charity. They're not going to be a charity. We need to recognise for what they are. They're there to make return for shareholders, and the average shareholder only holds a share in this country for, on average, I think at the moment, about a day. They all turn over, so they don't care what happens to the value of the company in 5 years' time. They just want to make a nice profit for a short period of time, and if they don't really like the company, they'll flip off somewhere else. Mm. Unfortunately, we'll be here for a lot longer. Those fish won't be here for a lot longer. They're floating dead.
Yes.
Oliver, it's been a refreshing conversation. Yes. A great way to start the day, actually.
We want
more libs like you, actually.
Well, you never know. I might not be one for very long. If I keep talking like this, I'll be disappearing in Melindy Lakes myself. I might be the first floater.
Well, let's hope that's not the case.
Okay, well, great. I'd love to come back anytime.
Excellent.
Love to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming
in.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.